Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. On occasion, a man comes onto my radar who coaches women on matters of the heart. My first reaction is, I will admit, a bit of cynicism, and my first question to the guest usually addresses my doubt. Today, obviously, Byrne set my concerns at ease immediately. I say obviously because you're going to listen to our conversation. I never chat with people I think won't bring you value. And our conversation was so much fun. Whether it was a question or a roadblock, Baron had great responses throughout. Responses, and he had done his homework for our demographic. Research, statistics, experience. He really addressed so many issues I brought up. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Have a few chuckles. And feel motivated to date again if it's on your mind. Listen now to my conversation with Baron Mendez. Partners, lovers, flings, each one of you has thoughts about having one or more of those in your life at this stage of life. A phrase I often hear is, can't live with them, can't live without them. More and more of us, though, are liking our lives with lots of friends and none of the messy bits of partnering and or cohabiting. I'm one of those, although I do say never. If you're looking for, or at least open to, a relationship, you're going to want to hear what my guest today has to say. Baron is a neuroscience-based dating and relationship coach with 14 years' experience helping accomplished women thriving in midlife quickly move past subconscious emotional barriers to form deeply committed partnerships. And with that, Bernardo Mendez, Baron, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Thanks, Agnes. I appreciate excited to be here with
Yeah, well, okay, the obvious question though, you're a man, how can
you.
you coach women about dating?
Well, I'd say that as a man, the majority of my clients are heterosexual women who are interested in understanding kind of like not just what their girlfriends have said to them, but what men think. So not just because I'm a man, but I think I'm a man who has taken a long time to understand what's the situation in terms of women having specific challenges right now, different from men. And I've been able to test a few ideas on the ground with hundreds of clients who've resulted in marriages, life partnerships, and families and the sort. So it's been a long time of research, work, and also figuring out what works and what doesn't.
Okay. Now, in your profile, it says his method combines practical neuroscience, trauma-informed somatic approaches based on polyvagal theory, and insights from attachment research. Byrne starts by helping clients regulate their nervous systems and identify their emotional priorities. Can you explain that? Put it in lay terms.
Yeah, I mean that means that there are many different ways of understanding life and work, and there is a way that helps you understand what's happening inside of you that isn't just something along the lines of you have bad self-esteem, therefore it's not happening for you. You know, for I'll give you a practical example to share a bit more what that means. I've had clients who have been unable, for example, before doing this work, to end relationships that are addictive or toxic in nature. And sometimes there's the notion that they're not strong-willed or they're not smart enough, or their friends might say, well, your self-esteem is low, that's why you continue being this person. That's one way of looking at it. But also, if you recognize how the brain works and how the nervous system works, then you'll see that there's other things happening inside of them. There's a dopamine rush taking place every time the person connects with them. There's a sense of withdrawal when that person's not there. There's anxiety, which provokes maybe a bit of cortisol, you know, and adrenaline to get released, which magnify that dopamine response. And then on top of that, there's going to be the person who maybe doesn't show up consistently, you know? So it creates this cycle of addiction that is far, it's a physiological response, not a just a psychological response. So the neuroscience base simply means being informed into what helps your nervous system regulate. So you're not at the mercy of just white knuckling things, but have very practical ways of engaging with life and connecting with men that don't take the wind out from you. I'll give you another practical example. You know, many women and men this day and age meet on dating apps. And dating apps are something that, based on the way that the algorithm is made up, and based on how you experience the consistency and inconsistency of human beings showing up there, it creates an addictive feeling. It's one of those things that's cataloged like casinos. It has the same effect, you know, where you put a little coin in the casino, gives you maybe $2, and then you lose 400, but you're still pulling the little lever because you hope you're going to get something else. So if you don't have a system for regulating your nervous system, you have the app open 24/7, then studies have shown that by week number 12, you'll experience the same level of emotional burnout that ICU nurses experience. But if you have the ability to use it maybe just twice a day in a specific with a specific time frame, and you have the ability to, when something very challenging happens, maybe do some breathing or maybe do some movement, then you won't be at the mercy of the algorithm. You'll have a chance to actually make it work for you instead of being used by whatever app is you're paying.
So we need to be that Meg Ryan client who only goes on the dating app when that ding, you've got mail happens.
Well, that's the challenge. I mean, because the app, if you enable it the way the app wants you to, you'll get that ding 55 times a day. And sometimes you'll see that little ding, and it'll be somebody sending you an emoji, or a guy saying, "Hey, beautiful," or maybe something worse. We can all imagine what that is. So if you shut that down, meaning you turn it on when you want to, then you will engage with it when you're present, but you won't be hijacked all day long with that distraction. That is not just it's not just a distraction. Like, the same part of your brain that experiences physical pain experiences rejection. So if you send a message to someone, let's say you connect with a guy, send a message, he doesn't reply to you in 3, 4, 5 days, there's a part of you that's feeling pain. You're not, I mean, it's not just a little rejection. It's like it's physically painful for you.
Yeah. And it's interesting too now at this age looking at something like that and going, it could well not be about me. It could be that
For
they're
sure.
on vacation,
Yeah.
without checking. Yeah,
Or
yeah.
that they don't know what they want, but it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, are there women who can't be helped? And I don't mean that in a nasty way. It's just, we're coming at it from this age. Sometimes people are so hardened from past experiences or, maybe personal or maybe what they've seen in their family, that perhaps they need other counseling
Sure.
before they get to relationship coaching.
Absolutely, yes. The answer is yes. I mean, not that they can't be helped. They can be helped through a different method that's not coaching. And that's why I take a, it's the least scalable way to grow a business, to have a face-to-face, one-on-one conversation with every person that wants to work with you. I don't have a coach that's going to talk to them, or a website they sign up through. I mean, I'm going to have a conversation with them to make sure that there's someone that I can help, and that doesn't need something like therapy, for example, because maybe the trauma is too entrenched and they need something that's far more specific to their situation than a practical way of maybe connecting with human beings. So I consider myself gifted in how I do things. I also know my limitations, and I know that I'm not a therapist. So if somebody comes to me and I see the signs that they need something beyond the coaching, then I'll be the first one to suggest that. So it's not a painful experience, you know, for both human beings involved.
Well, you say that, although I must admit my first thought was, oh, not only is the guy on the dating app rejecting me, but now the dating coach is rejecting me. So I'm sure you have to be very careful on how you
For
phrase.
sure. Yeah, because the thing, my thing is not, "Hey, you don't do it for me." I mean, it's like, "Hey, I've noticed right now, here's the signs that I see that would mean that this would be a better approach for you right now." Because the last thing I want to do is take your money and not give you the result that you want, because this is not cheap coaching, right? So I want to make sure that the person's feeling like they have what they need, for sure. But yeah, th there is that fine line where somebody could feel rejection. And that's why there's a personal conversation versus just an email or a message. Like, "Hey, we talk it out."
Okay, there we go. Now, before we get into the meat of this, I
Sure.
want to just discuss the fact that our audience is in their 50s, 60s, 70s. A lot of our views about partners are learned and reinforced. Can they? We undo those expectations and start over.
Yes, we can. And it does require work. So what I mean by that is there's something called neuroplasticity, meaning you're able to create new connections throughout life. if you do certain things to create it. And the reason why I say if we do work is like there's a famous writer who talks a lot about relationships. He has a really beautiful YouTube channel called The School of Life. Alain de Botton is his name. And he talks about the difficulty in creating changes in this way of being similar or akin to learning a new language. So if you say, I've never had a good connection with someone, and I really want to learn what it takes to create that attraction, to sustain connection, to repair interactions. Imagine that you're about to learn Italian right now. You've never spoken the language. That's the level of difficulty. It is possible, but if you watch a couple of videos and go to one session of coaching and you say, why is this not happening? Well, because you need more. I mean, so if you understand it that way, then you can do it. It's just going to take time and energy, and also something beyond this time and energy. There needs to be something that I call the strong why. And here's what I mean by that. If the whole thing is this is going to be a little bit of a cherry on top of the ice cream, the level of difficulty required for a long connected relationship is not insignificant. So for a nice to have, it's unlikely that somebody will get it. For a really visceral why, and it's not just about getting the person, but here's about how I'll transform as a human being. Here's who I'll be in ways that I can't be just on my own. Here's what I'll be able to heal in the safety and container of a good relationship. And for all those reasons, it makes sense to invest time and energy. But if it's just for like I want a weekend boyfriend, it's maybe a little too challenging a climb to do it.
Right. Now, a lot of, I don't know, they're sort of like questionnaires, evaluations. They always have that piece that is, the relationship. And they seem to insist that there needs to be that personal, intimate piece in the relationship field. Now, I know several women, including myself, who are really happy and fulfilled being single. Are you okay with that?
I mean, why would I not? This is a free world, so
Oh yeah, no, I just mean that, so many people try to convince me that I'm not complete without a man in my life.
I mean, I'm not one of those. I think that, I mean, there's a group of human beings, I include myself in that category, that feel that in the container of an intimate relationship, there's going to be a different level of excitement and experience that is different from being on your own. But if you choose willingly that that's something you want, then I think that's all the power to
Okay, thank you.
I mean, it's just like for in my experience, 1 + 1 = 5 sometimes if it's the right person. 1 + 1 = -10 if it's the wrong person. So it's a matter of perspective, I think that there's aspects, at least in my studies and in my way of looking at life, that there's parts of us that will express themselves differently with someone in front of us. There's a mirroring that will be very, very specific. That may not happen meditating in the mountain. That will happen when somebody's basically sharing with you something, or maybe triggering things in you that you didn't even know were there, and may need some healing, So I think but it's a challenging thing, especially the way we look at relationships right now, where if we take the path of relationships are everything, then you do away with your best friends and you do away with community. But if you have that balance, you have community, you have best friends, you have passions, you have hobbies, and you have a relationship, it can be a really beautiful addition to someone's life.
Okay. Now we're basically going to talk about relationships, like partnerships, that sort of thing. Now we're talking primarily a love connection, but do these same concepts apply for platonic relationships sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I think the concept of there's going to be aspects of relationship and friendship and communication and attunement and expressing needs that are going to be similar in a relationship that's platonic. There's going to be an added element of punch when you have someone that you're romantically connected to, because there's that extra thing of the rejection feels sometimes a little bit more sharp. When there's that connection, that level of intimacy taking place. But yeah, the concepts of relationship are not exclusive to a romantic one. I think that there's parts of it that sometimes there's maybe more stakes for many of us, when there's something that's when you're emotionally, physically, spiritually naked in front of someone, the vulnerability level sometimes it's just a little different.
Now, I'm not throwing roadblocks up. I'm honestly not. I'm going to mention our demographic again. Now, we
Sure,
can do
please.
all the work on ourselves we want, but the men out there are set in their ways too. How do we
What are you
get?
talking about? Men are great. All men are great.
I go back to my first question. How do... No, I'm just kidding. I can't believe I just put my hands on my hips as I did
I like it. Hey, you're on video.
that. Oh, dear. Okay, so we got to do something about the men too, because
Yeah,
they're
for
at the
sure.
same, they've got those experiences behind them, they've got preconceived notions about. And I'll actually, now that I'm saying that, I'm going to throw in a comment that when I was much younger and, just got married, that sort of thing, I did realize that for men of my demographic, their role models were fathers who were the earners, the wage
Yeah, the
earners,
breadwinner, yeah, for
the
sure.
breadwinner, thank you. And oftentimes their mothers were full-time homemakers, whereas we women of my demographic were out there, burning our bras and marching and getting jobs and all that sort of stuff. So, it was a much bigger climb for them, like even the men of my demographic, to get to where we were and to understand it, I guess. So, okay, now I'm going to go back to the fact that at age 60 or 65, these men have all these preconceived notions.
Yeah, I think that's where the uniqueness of the individual basically matters. So here's the thing. I've been doing a lot of research into what are the challenges that women in midlife face at different from any other point in history and different from other women basically right now. And one of those pillars, there's four forces that are really make it challenging for women. One of them has to do with the crisis in masculinity, not in the sense of in the sense, like I'll give you a few points to share this. I mean, like the difference between the number of men who have mental health issues and go to therapy versus women. There's a 15-point gap, basically. And by that, I mean fewer men than women. There's also going to be the number of close friendships that men report now versus before. Many men report right now they don't have any close friendships. When you go out on a date, the guy doesn't have any friends, then you're going to become the therapist, metaphorically speaking. There's going to be challenges in terms of suicide rates. I mean, it's almost four times the number of suicides men versus women. But and the, on top of the whole thing is this elephant in the room, taking a poop basically that no one's talking about, which is patriarchy. You mentioned it, right? There's preconceived notions in the some people's in the name of tradition. It's an oppressive way of looking at the world where men benefit more than women. So I'm with you on that front. So my whole approach isn't, why is the system rigged? Because it kind of is. My approach is, how can you, if you want to get this, how can you get what you want? What are the ways in which you can stand out and get something that perhaps is not what everybody else is getting? And that has to do with the approach. I mean, where you connect with men, the types of conversations you have, the gap of age that you're willing to connect with or not, the level of expression you have that makes you more attractive to more men or not. So there's all these different factors we can tweak that put you in the context where, although many men will have those things that we're talking about right now, some men won't, and you can stand out more in that group and create something powerful for yourself.
It's interesting you say that, because one of the quotes I have here in my notes is, and I can't even remember where I heard it, where it came from, is be the person who would attract the person that you want. So it's all very well to sit here, eating bonbons all day and doing crosswords and, being surrounded by cats, and then expecting to get the high achieving executive with the, like $500,000 a year job and all that sort of stuff. Like you've got to
For sure.
become, and really, I guess that takes analyzing who exactly are you looking for.
That's a great statement, Agnes. And here's the reason why, because I think that there's, and this is not exclusive to women, women and men have two types of lists. When I sit down in front of someone who's really intelligent, really high achieving, she's built a great life for herself, and I say, tell me what you want in a guy. Smart, kind, integrity. And that's the overt list that she's willing to share. Secret list that she doesn't necessarily voice out with so much enthusiasm is, he must be 6 foot tall and he must make this much money. All these things that maybe are not necessarily overt expressions, but really are treated sometimes as a non-negotiable. So part of the work that I do when I help my clients is figure out what's essential and what is a nice to have, so we don't treat both the same and we have more options. Because if you go from he must be 6 foot 2 and you eliminate 97%, 93% of men in the US just by the first wish and you have 30 wishes, you can make it mathematically impossible to get what you want. But if you say, you know what, that's my preference, but I'm open to something else, then you open up to so many more men in that category. So it's really about figuring out A, how to tweak those variables, and B, how to be in the right rooms where you get a chance to connect with the type of man that you're interested in beyond the apps.
It's interesting you say that because, and I'm hoping it's not just because I live in laid back West Coast Canada, but I'm seeing, like, I go out in public and there's all sorts of relationships amongst younger people, and I'll say probably the under 35 demographic, where shapes and sizes, and I mean, when it was my when I was dating, it was like the guy had to be taller, you know, all that sort of stuff. Whereas now it's like nothing, like none of that matters, it seems. Like
It
that's what I'm
matters less than it
seeing.
used to.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I guess within reason. Yeah, everything's got
I mean,
parameters, but
and younger generations are more open, just like younger men are more open and more and less patriarchal than older men sometimes, you know, just because they've had to be. They've grown up in a different era, so they've been more open, more exposed to different ways of being. There's also, I mean, but in, I mean, I just wrote an article for a grand magazine, which basically a magazine for grandparents, you know. And there's a huge population right now of people in later life who are creating really amazing relationships because they're being more open about different ways of relating. For example, the traditional way of we must get married, live in the same house, may not work for somebody who's 60 or 70, but they may live in separate houses and still have an amazing relationship together. Or they may live in even different cities and see each other on the weekends. It's living together apart. That's a new thing. And the satisfaction when they've taken surveys for people who live together apart versus people who are in the same household is not less than people. I mean, so there's many more ways of relating that give people more options in terms of, because they expand the pool of people you can connect with. Also, they expand the idea of it doesn't have to be the way it's always been done.
I'm glad you said that because a man I know who likes having a partner spent the last couple of years unpartnered. I'm choosing my words here. But in the last maybe 8 months, has been seeing a woman, spending a lot of time with this woman. But the woman, and his words were, she's kind of like you. Likes being in a relationship, but doesn't want to cohabit or anything like that. And I went, hey, you know, that's not a bad thing, you know, but it was sort of interesting, you know, it was, but yeah, that's if
Because
that's
that might
becoming the
make the
norm.
difference between somebody finding a partner or saying, ah, it's too much hassle, I don't want to do it. And it may work out really good for both partners. So I think that if you're more open to more possibilities and more formats of relationship, which is part of the work that I do, help my clients see what other possibilities, so it still works for you.
Yeah, I think I said to him, in that case, she'll never be able to complain about the fact that you spent like all day in the workshop working on that project. Oh, dear. Now, the other issue at this age, and I, that issue, not in a bad way, is many men are either divorced or widowed. A little true confession here. My experience is that often they're comparing you to their previous wife. Talk to
Well,
me.
here's the thing, because the divorce rate is equal between men and women. There's also lots of women who basically are divorced at this age and who might be doing the same thing, you know? But I understand if your question is like, how do you address that type of situation? I think that sometimes the vast majority of human beings that I've connected with are not basically, the guy is not saying, I loved her so much. She was so amazing. I'm not with her anymore. So you can't compare with her. It's more like, no, she didn't work out. More like blaming than saying it was amazing. So it's not a comparison necessarily in the bad sense. But I mean, you'll get a chance to see it. I mean, sometimes you get to connect with someone whose partner died, you know, and that's much more of a visceral thing of maybe they were truly in love with that person. Maybe they even helped basically stay with that person until the end. But then you have someone who has shown in real life what their values are. Somebody who actually cared so much about someone. I mean, I've had clients who have that, you know, and the guy ended up being with the woman until her last breath and then took some time just to be by himself, to recoup, and then is out there again Is there going to be some comparison? Probably, but also there's going to be some willingness to share of himself, probably beyond a selfish person. You know, it's like somebody who has children. They may have less time, but they've also proven they can be more selfless. So you take the good with the bad.
Okay, several thoughts here. First of all, I try to pride myself on being open-minded, but when you said, "Yeah, well, there's women out there that are divorced and widowed too," it was like, "Oh yeah, you're right." Now, the other part being, of course, is this age. Our kids are all adults, and sometimes they think they know what's best for their parent, and so that can be an issue between like what could potentially be a good relationship and that one kid or another. It's always their kid, of course. Who says, oh, no, don't do that, they're all after the wrong thing and whatever,
I mean, I think it's important to listen to family members who love you because they typically have a good intent. You know, that doesn't mean that the good intent has good data necessarily, or the good intent is going to serve you. So, but really being empathetic and listening beyond the advice, like, is there something deeper that you're communicating with me? Is there something I can, because there might be some give and take. At the end of the day, it's going to be a personal decision, you know, to say, hey, because part of the reason why many of my clients basically decide to do this is not just for themselves, but they want to share with their children, even if they're adults, that this is possible, that they haven't given up, that they've been willing to they can create something beautiful, second act in life. So I think that the more adult the kids are, I think that the easier it is typically for somebody to, just because they don't live in the same house, there's going to be less tension. It's easier to manage that. I think sometimes it's harder when there's young children because A, it takes longer. I mean, I recommend that somebody takes a lot longer to meet somebody else's children until they're in a solid relationship, because you want to make sure that there's something stable for the kids. But beyond that, there's going to be the other partner and the co-parenting, and there's going to be much more involvement for maybe a previous person in their life, just given the nature of younger children. But it's still doable. I mean, I've had clients who integrate families beautifully. Is it the easiest thing? No, but it's doable when you have two conscious beings who get together and they do the best for not just the kids, but for themselves as well, you know?
I want to move on, but just one other thing I'm going to mention here is I remember who almost 50 years ago, a good friend of mine, who was going through her fourth divorce, said to me, "It was really hard, but I had to admit that after four failed marriages, maybe the problem was me." So, just like a supporting what you do, and so far as, like if you've got a track record, sometimes you do need to look inward.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things where I take a slightly different approach. I don't consider anything a failed marriage, because I think that you learn, you have information, you grow, and because no one wants to fail. And that's one of the reasons people stay with the wrong person for a long time, because if they view it as failure, society-wise and themselves, then they can stay for somebody for 3 more years because they don't want to fail. So in my, it's just like it's a process. Now, you don't want to marry and divorce multiple times if you can take some time out and figure out what's happening. And typically it's a misunderstanding of their own attachment style. You read attachments at the beginning. So understanding your attachment style is really important, because that's going to impact how you connect with any human being, not just romantic relationships, you know, in life. And if you understand that, then a lot of the problems in couples have to do with people with mismatched attachment styles and an inability to communicate, you know, their needs and their wants. So partner A gets triggered. Imagine that's the microphone, and partner B is the speaker and gets triggered too. So have you ever heard a speaker and a microphone interact with each other? The microphone makes the speaker make horrible noise in a concert, and the horrible noise in the concert interacts with the microphone. So it's worse. It's like that trick. That's what happens in couples sometimes. So taking a time out to figure out what's going on, getting help is really important. I mean, there's going to be a time where if you try to fix this thing multiple times on your own and it hasn't worked, then getting some outside help is help. I mean, is needed, you know, whether it's therapy or coaching or a different approach that's more somatic in nature. I think that there's something to be said about not having to reinvent the wheel, or not having to rediscover fire, because there's things that have been proven, you know, to work and to make things better. That you're gonna, I mean, practical things.
Okay, you just used that word fire. Good segue. I've just met someone, and this is theoretical.
Oh, sure, Agnes.
Oh God, I hope he's not listening to this. No, I'm joking. Okay, so I've just met someone. I'm attracted to them. Talk to me about brain versus heart versus libido.
Okay, well, I mean, they're all connected. I mean, so let's say you connect with someone, right? You connect with this person and you find attract yourself attracted to him. I'll say this. I mean, attraction is so complicated because it's not just the physical nature of the human being. It could be their scent that's triggering something inside of you. It could be a reminder of someone in your previous life. It could be a reminder of your parents sometimes, you know? I've had clients who say to me, "This guy's so magic. You don't understand. He's so incredible." And we go through the list and they don't really know the guy, but they feel something so exciting about him. And sometimes that's the exciting thing is his energy is very, it's much like mom that was a little bit mean to them or dad or so. So there's psychological aspects to it. Basically, how you learned to experience intimacy growing up is going to be something that if you don't work on it, you'll tend to repeat again. I equate it to a thermostat. If you're a thermostat growing up, first 4, 5, 6 years of age was set at 30 degrees Fahrenheit. That's cold, meaning you have inconsistency, you have maybe some level of abuse, you
I'm
have
sorry,
some level.
I'm in Canada and I was
Okay,
thinking,
centigrades, yeah, Acapulco.
because I didn't hear the Fahrenheit and I went, you call that cold? Holy moly,
Yeah,
where are you
no,
from?
yeah. Let's
Sorry,
say
okay.
32 freezing temperature, you know? You have somebody who's inconsistent, somebody who is misattuned to you. And so that's, you learn that that is intimacy. Right? You equate that level of vibration with intimacy. So when you want to connect with somebody growing up and you want something warmer, you want 80 degrees, you know, Fahrenheit, and you keep going for the same thing that feels like home. So that's something psychological in nature. But there's also when you connect with someone and you really feel the spark, you know, Helen Fisher did a lot of studies regarding this, that you can take someone who's the initial stages of falling in love and a cocaine addict, and you can't tell the difference in their brains. The same parts are active, you know, there's going to be this dopamine, vasopressin, oxytocin, all these things that are taking place inside that create this feeling of extra focus, obsessive. Yeah, your dopamine level, I mean, I'm sorry, your serotonin level is going to drop, which means you'll be more obsessive about the person. So if you ever catch yourself 24/7, maybe not now in a previous life, thinking of someone, not being able to, there's the combination of the cocktail in your neurobiology taking place that where you feel I'm in love. And you could say that, but there's also something happening inside. And that's why advice for anyone who met someone who feels like they just angels are singing is take it slower than you want to, take it slower than you think you need to. I mean, breathe more, exercise more, take way longer to connect physically, because as soon as you connect physically, there's going to be, especially if you have sex with someone, there's going to be powerful neurochemicals that create attachment. And if you get attached to the wrong person, not only will you not see the red flags, but you will be unable to sometimes end that connection. So it's really important to slow things down. I know it sounds like a grandpa advice, slow it down, but it's really, really helpful because you get a chance to understand who somebody is. And by the time that you become physically connected with them, you may not even do that because you find you're incompatible. But if you do, there's more emotional investment and there's more safety because you're not playing Russian roulette the same way you are when you first connect with someone and it feels explosive in nature.
Right. And I think too, a lot of women my age have learned to trust their gut, shall we say. So if it looks like it's going to advance into a sexual relationship or something, but your gut's still saying, oh, and he still pushes, then he's the wrong guy, probably.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that it's going to be common for a guy to push. How he reacts to your boundary will be determining to he if he's good for you or not. You know, the guy might really like you and feel very compelled to connect with you, and maybe you can even say, "Oh, I feel flattered, and I'm not ready." If the guy's trying to convince you that you're too stiff because of it or that you're wrong for it, then not the best fit because you need more safety to be able to create that connection for all the reasons we discussed right now, including not wanting to. The example I give is if you do this thing where you connect with somebody early on and sparks are flying and you just connect with them, just let go, you might find yourself a few weeks later, a few months later, or a few years later, in a dark alley eating tuna from a can, not knowing how you got there. You know, it's just like your entire life has changed. Your self-esteem has, through the floor. Your friends don't recognize you anymore. I had the chance to connect with someone recently who was sharing this story with me about this very painful relationship that lasted maybe 5 years, I think. Emotionally abusive, physically abusive. They couldn't get out of it, but it started really strong, like the sparks that we're talking about right now. Had it not started that way, it would have probably had a better chance of not developing into something that like that, you know?
I interviewed some time ago a dating coach, woman, our demographic, and she coaches online dating because sometimes that's a it's a could be potentially a risky place to find people. Now, what she had a list of must-haves, which if there seemed to be a bit of a connection, she would send that out and say, "Go through this, and if you can tick off everything, let's continue." And if they reacted badly to that, that told her everything anyways. And then if they got through the first piece, then if the connection seemed pretty good in person, she would actually have sex with them early on because that was also important to her. And if it wasn't good, then she knew right now, okay, so it was the old story of kissing a lot of frogs in the hope that one of them will be the prince, I guess.
I mean, I understand that approach. The reason why I don't agree with that approach is because there's two risks. You know, it's all about how you want to mitigate risk. Risk number one is you connect with someone and you wait longer and you end up having sex a little later and the sex is not great. You can still work on that sexual aspect if it's worth it. Doesn't mean that it's always going to work out, but it can. And if you have more connection with that person, more depth, more vulnerability, the sex might be better. Now, that's door number one. So the risk would be great connection, incredible friendship, amazing compatibility. The sex is not great. Risk number two, sex is great. Your brain basically starts telling you the person is better than they are. And then you lose yourself. And then you find out 3 months later, because you continue having sex, that the person is not the best one for you. And now you can't get out. To me, risk number one is far superior than risk number two, at least for the people I connect with, because they're both risky, but one of them is riskier than the other one, in my point of view.
Ooh, there's a lot to this, isn't there? Now, I listened to one of your other interviews, and a phrase you used a couple of times was about the man taking care of me. And I must admit, I felt my back go up a little bit because I don't want to be taken care of. I want an equal partner, or as another man that I once knew said, a 60-40 relationship. And when he clarified that, he said, yeah, both of us give 60% and we take 40%. So it was like both people. Can you go into that? Because you just mentioned the word safety, and I guess that prompted that thought of, don't want a man to
I
take
mean,
care of me.
there's multiple ways of looking at this. One, I mean, taking care of you doesn't mean he's going to pay all your bills and then tell you what to do and what not to do. I mean, because that's probably what you're reacting to right now. It's like, hey, take care of me, but he's not my dad. So why does he need to take care of me? But I think it's a mutual thing, right? You take care of each other in different ways, right? I think that one of the, I mean, like they've done, this brings up, I mean, something. There's a study that was done in 1989, the first time, and that in 37 countries that asked women what they're looking for in partners. And one of the number one things that came up, and you might say, well, this is too far away, it's 1989, was a man who's protective. And this is across different cultures, different economic levels, different, I mean, we're talking about women who are CEOs and women who are moms and don't have another job besides being mom, right? They did the same study in 2022. And the same thing happened. They did it in 45 countries now. Now, it's very important to figure out when we're be more nuanced about it because somebody might say, well, protective means he's going to kill the tiger, but also keep me in the kitchen, right? That's one way. I mean, that's the earlier patriarchal level of protection. I'm going to work and you're going to do pretty much what I tell you to do. You know, that was my grandma and grandpa relationship. You know, I mean, my grandma was staying home with the kids. beautiful human being. My grandfather was working, and but he kind of made more of the rules than she did, you know, until later in life. Later in life, I think it evened out, or even maybe went the other way. You know, he
We
had to pay
women
a
have
little bit
our
for what he
ways.
did originally. But the way, I mean, like, if you look at somebody protective, is somebody who can understand what your needs are, somebody who's there for you, somebody who's present, somebody who's competent, somebody who need arises, he can step up to the challenge and not basically say, well, you go kill the cockroach, right? Maybe you like killing cockroaches, I don't know. So I think that there's going to be some give and take in this polarity that we experience, that if there's emotional safety and there's this need, I mean, for example, you were talking about earlier in life, earlier with younger people, that things are more open. But I mean, if I talk to maybe 100 women in midlife, I'd be surprised if maybe one or two tell me I want a shorter man. Why is that? Why do women want taller men? Why do women prefer stronger versus weaker men? Why do women prefer guys who are more economically solvent than guys who are not? Because there's an element of competence and an element of, I mean, we go back to the protection that can take place, not in the I own you, but in like we can, I can drop basically the things that I'm doing right now, and I know that you have my back. But it goes both ways. It's not just, I mean, you're also taking care of him in multiple different ways. It just sometimes people look, we don't necessarily look at the same things, but we both want to be taken care of, you know, by the person we're with.
Okay, I'll allow you that one.
Sure, thank you.
I was just thinking, like in terms of someone stronger, it's like, well, not too much stronger because I like to win at arm wrestling from time to time.
Okay, yeah, I
No, I'm
mean,
just... Okay, you also use the word radiance. Define radiance for us.
radiance is that inner light that you don't have to work necessarily hard at. How do I share it? Is when you are in life, doing the things you're excited about, doing the things that make you feel connected to the best of you, naturally emerge from your being. So I'll give you an example. Imagine that you have two different days. One day you wake up and you open up your app or your news instead of like the first thing in the morning. I mean, I'm not saying that you do that, but imagine that you did. You open up the news and you find that a certain president is basically saying that they're going to own your country, right? Crazy man, right? So imagine that that's your thing. And then you come up, and then somebody, a friend calls you and they give you some bad news, and then your electricity is cut out by mistake. And then you go on a date. Okay? Imagine the next day you wake up in the morning, you don't look at the news, you give thanks for everything you have. And then you go on a walk, you connect with nature, and then you connect with a friend who's reminding you how amazing their life is as a result of you. The radiance that comes out of both women being you, will be different. The type of connection that you can create from one or the other is exponentially different. So in my work, radiance is something that I use powerfully because I think women mistakenly, and not, it's not the fault of women. I think there's many factors, from the way society works to the very double standards existing for women's beauty versus men, this whole ageism that exists. For many reasons, women feel like I'm not beautiful enough to create the connection type person I want. And my whole thing is, if you're radiant, that will trump DNA type beauty, you know? And that's something that's within your grasp. You don't choose basically your DNA, but you can choose your energy. And if you focus on that instead of impossible standard of beauty, you have a great chance of connecting with someone and having a lot of connection and depth with that person.
Yeah, and I can agree with what you say. I work with elders, like frail elderly. And oh my goodness, you'll meet that person who doesn't matter what their past is, but they just exude warmth and positivity and they're just beautiful despite the wrinkles and like all that stuff that
For
you see
sure.
first. As soon as they smile, their face just lights up, and they are just a whole incredibly beautiful
Energy
person.
is incredibly contagious.
Yeah.
And also, energy can be incredibly repulsive, depending upon what energy we're talking about.
Yeah. Okay, so say a woman comes to you and you work together. Is there a difference between, now this woman and I'm maybe not be choosing my words correctly,
That's okay.
but say she becomes healthy going into a new relationship. Is there
Sure.
a difference between meeting someone in real life through an activity, through a friend, whatever, and online connections?
Yes and no. And here's what I mean by
Okay.
that. There is, if you meet somebody in real life, your ability to assess more of who they are quickly will be right there, because we are creatures that have developed through millennia to be able to gauge basically partnership in real life. So you can have the visual, the energy, the scent of that person, which is something subconscious, but I mean, we're gauging for. There's so many different factors that will make it easier initially. Having said that, a meeting online that doesn't lead to an in-real meeting is a waste of time. And a meeting online that leads to an in-real life meeting will end up being the same just a little bit later. So part of the advice I give my clients is when you connect with someone, if there's something interesting about them, don't delay the connecting in real life. But first, because you're going to go through, I mean, especially if you're doing this systematically, the last thing I want you to do is go on a date, sit at a restaurant, the guy arrives, and the first second you say like, no, and now you're stuck for 2 hours, right? And have you taken 5 minutes to do a video call, you would have seen something that's blatantly glaring that prevents you from connecting in real life. So connect with somebody, not too much back and forth. You know, I would not advise for somebody to send, here's my laundry list of 10 things. Let me know if that works for you, because that might feel a little intense. I would say maybe ask one or two good questions, like maybe, what are you looking for in a relationship? You know, that person will say what they're looking for. If they just want to, I don't know, friend with benefits. Well, no, thanks. Don't need to connect. But if they have something similar with you, then take it to a video call. And the video call isn't to determine if they're the partner for life that you've been looking for, but simply to rule out something glaring, like maybe the person is 30 years difference from their pictures, or maybe the energy and the vibe is something that your gut will say, this feels unsafe, that you don't want to connect in real life. But if they pass, even if you're not super excited, your heart is not bursting, the angels haven't sung, meet with them in person and then evaluate in real life what's possible.
A radio station here locally recently said, what do women prefer as first dates? And dinner was not on the list. I think it was like, let's make it a coffee date or an activity date so that it's really easy to cut it short if there's not going to be, but it can lead on to something else
For
if
sure.
there is a connection.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, your turn. What haven't I asked you that you want women to really think about as they consider getting into or back into perhaps remembering a relationship, remembering our listeners are older women?
I'm not sure what you haven't asked me. You've had some good questions. I would say, here's my message. I'm not sure what the question would be for this. My message would be, if you're listening to this right now and there's a part of you that says, I may want this. I may not be too old for this. There's part of me that feels like this is something that I feel excited about. I haven't gotten exactly the type of connection that I want, but I'm hopeful that it's available. I would say that there is a chance you can get this if you're willing to learn a few more skills that no one had taught you. Your parents didn't teach you this. Your many years of high education didn't teach you this. Your friends didn't teach you this. So if we take the approach that love is a skill, not just a feeling, attraction can also be a skill, then we can learn those skills and have results that we've never had before. You know, there's clients that say, but I've tried for 10 years and this hasn't happened. Well, who's the I who's tried for 10 years? If it's the I that's felt more cynical, the I that hasn't had the skills, then we can change that I. You know, because it's not you. You are not your behavior. Your behavior is something else. And there's ways for you to get what you want. Is it easy? No. Anyone who sells you on the idea that it's easy, please run away, because they're trying to sell you snake oil, you know. But as someone who's worked with women in 24 countries who've not never gotten sometimes what they wanted and they finally got it, I can tell you firsthand that it's possible, even though it's challenging, you know. And getting some help, I'm not saying I'm the help. There's many ways of getting help. Can make the difference between you 10, 15 more years trying, or in the next few months connecting with someone in a way that you haven't before.
Okay. My thought, as you said, they've been trying for 10 years, is I'm thinking the I that started 10 years ago And the I today that still hasn't seen success is probably a little bit jaded and stuff and could probably do with some coaching.
For sure. I think there's, and it's, there's no shame and there's no criticism on my part. Like I get it. I mean, I understand. I mean, as I started doing my research right now, I mean, for all the variables, I came to a point where I said, I don't know if I want to share all these things. It's going to feel too sad. But then here's the way I look at things. It's not to say, well, there's no sun because my thumb is covering the sun, but how can we look at all the data? And it is significant. That makes it challenging for women in midlife to create connection and create solutions that actually counterbalance all those points so we can still get what we want. So that's my approach. My approach is not just, I'm going to make something up that maybe works. I'm looking at the data and saying, what are the ways in which I can balance this off? So despite the stuff out there, we still have a shot of getting what we want. Like think about it this way. Anything that is worth anything in this life started as a crazy dream. The internet, airplanes, cars, washing machines, anything. So if you have the strong sense of, I'd say start with a why, don't start with a how. If you start with a how, it's over. You know, it's how is very difficult if there's not, but if you start with why do I want this, then there's ways to figure out the how. It's just do it in reverse.
I have a bonus question, but I just want to
Sure.
add in there that I call them yabbits. So, you can present all the information that you can, and there's invariably a few people out there that go, "Yeah, but,"
Yeah.
and you gotta be able to say, "Yeah, instead of "yeah, but," like
Yeah.
drop the but.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. And also, if you're listen to this and say, "Yeah, but," or "It's not gonna work for me," there's nothing wrong. Like, you're not a. There's nothing wrong if you choose not to go for this. What I'm saying is that my invitation, a humble invitation, would be: don't say to yourself, "It's not on the cards for me," if you haven't tested a few things that, I mean, that can make it work. If you test everything and it doesn't work, then say it's not on the cards for me. But I think that there's still many people have done five things 100 times, and they say, I've done everything. No, we can do a few more things that can get you that new result.
There's always another chocolate chip cookie recipe out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, your bonus question. What
Sure.
would you say to men in this demographic?
I would say that women are longing for authenticity. Women are longing for men who are clear and expressive about what they want. Women are looking for men who are interested in playing no games. Like, if you're someone who wants a real relationship, voice it out and be clear about it. Women are wanting men who are not pushing for sex early on. They want emotional connection first, typically. And if they don't, sometimes it's still to their advantage to space that time out because it's going to make it more meaningful and also make sure that they don't connect. I mean, fall for someone that's not the right fit for them. Men are in a great space right now in life, the first time in human history where humans are capable of this type of connection that really hasn't happened before. So vulnerability goes a long way. Working on yourself goes a long way. Getting therapy, if you've never tried it in your life, makes a big difference. Connecting with men and talking about things matters as well. So anything you can do to create humble, vulnerable connections in your life will benefit the woman you end up choosing and being with.
All right. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
You can go to burnmendez.com. That's BERNMENDEZ.com. And from there, you have my YouTube channel that has hundreds of free videos. You have a quiz you can take for free also. And there's also a link if you want to work with me where we can talk about what's possible.
Okay. I always ask people about their social. Your YouTube has over 200,000 subscribers and almost 60,000 views. That is impressive.
Almost 30 million views, more than 30 million views. Yeah.
Okay. When I looked, it was 30 million.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe I read that. Now I apologize.
No, that's okay. I
Listeners,
mean,
listen to
I would be
Bern.
if I have 227 subscribers and less views and subscribers, there's something wrong.
Oh, of course. Oh, I've closed the window. Oh, well, okay. I stand correct. I sit corrected. And I really apologize.
No, I mean,
Didn't
please.
do the math.
That's okay.
Oh, dear. Tell us about the quiz.
Okay, sure. The quiz is going to be something that allows you to see, obviously, there's something way deeper we can figure out through a conversation, but it's going to give you some insight into if you're not experiencing what you want, What's the blind spot perhaps right now is preventing you from getting what you want? So you'll take it, I mean, it's maybe 60 seconds to a minute and a half to take the quiz, and then you get an answer. Here's the reason, number one reason right now where why this isn't happening for you right now.
Okay, that sounds easy enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
May I ask you a personal question before we close?
Please feel free.
Okay, now before I clicked record, I asked you a question and I was so out in left field, it was wrong. So maybe, as I said, you don't have a lot of personal presence on the internet. So I'm going to ask you another question, and this could be out in
Please.
left field too. Do you have a pet pig?
A pet pig. Yes, I do. Well, it doesn't live with me, but I do. It's my
Okay.
son's pet pig.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Bruno is his name. Yeah, we got this pet pig. I mean, I saw an article on Business Insider of this guy who grows miniature pigs, you know? So I said, Business Insider, legit, let's get this pet pig. $4,000. Let's go for it. And
Cheaper than a dog.
the pet pig that was a tiny pig ended up growing to more than 100 pounds. So
Oh, so is it still an indoor pet?
I mean, he's right now, we have some friends who have a beautiful home here that has a fun bunch of acres, and he's
Okay.
outside now. He has a
Oh.
girlfriend, you know,
Oh.
and they're both outside all day long.
Oh, good. So you might have some grand pigs at some point in time.
Exactly. Yeah, well, he's been neutered, but so I don't think
Oh,
so, but yeah.
okay.
But yeah, I mean, they're great animals, but at that size inside the house, it's a little challenging.
So he's not a miniature, even though he
I
started
mean,
out
I don't know
small.
that such a thing as miniatures really exist. I think he's 100 pounds. I mean, some pigs are 500 pounds,
Yeah,
so it's a
true.
small pig, but it's still, I mean, he's still something, you know?
You're gonna have to post an adult picture of him, but because he's a little guy,
For
he sure
sure.
was cute.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, your website link is in the show notes. All the links are on your page at our website, especially that YouTube. I gotta go back now and look. Listeners, you must have thoughts on today's show. Very few people have no opinion on relationships. So please talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there was a question I did not ask, Bairn. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. Just about all of us know women who can't be alone, who pick, I'm using air quotes, losers, or who have no confidence in their ability to connect with a great guy. They need to hear Bairn's words. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button on your favorite podcast platform. It helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. Bairn Mendez, thank you for being my guest today and just giving us so much food for thought. Oh my goodness. And I appreciate when somebody, for lack of a better term, calls me on my shit. Like, because when I go like, oh yeah, I guess I need to really consider that. That's great. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's been a lot of fun. I mean, I've been doing lots of podcasts, and it's always refreshing when somebody's genuinely interested and has opinions about the whole thing. It makes it so much more fun. So thank you for being you.
How does a person not have opinions about a
Well, I mean,
subject
it's
like
okay.
this?
It's not the people that sometimes people have thought out the questions in advance, and regardless of what happens, they're going to go through the questions. And in
Okay.
this case, I mean, something spark an idea, so you'd go and so and that's typically more fun.
Okay. Appreciate you.
Sure.
Have a great rest of week.